irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
All right.
Hello.
Wake Up Hollywood. I'm here with my co-host filling in for tonight, Dimitri Cerny. Say hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Going? Good. How are you?
Doing all right?
Yeah, good.
Crazy getting here.
Crazy.
Like, last minute, like, whoa, you're on the 101.
LA
it's crazy.
Traffic, man. LA traffic.
And our special guest for the evening is Mr. Bob Malone. Say hello.
Hello.
All right.
Hey, Bob.
Let's just jump right in. So, Bob, let's talk a little bit about music, man. Where do you come from?
I live in Studio City, 5 minutes away.
Are you born and raised in L.A.?
No.
Where are you originally from?
I came from New Jersey.
Oh, okay. All right. And did you study music out there?
Yep. Studied music at Berklee College of Music.
Nice.
Been playing for a living for 30 years. I played with John Fogerty. I tour solo.
That's amazing.
Wow.
What's it like touring with John Fogerty and touring solo?
It's great.
You're like, it's cool. It's
as
good
more
as
amenities
gets.
Than the other. It's the main difference.
Let's go way back to. Let me ask you a quick question. What was the thing that got you into music when you were a kid?
Well, when I was 9, I started taking classical piano lessons, and by 10, it was clear that I was talented, and I didn't want to do anything else after that.
And like, what kind of classical music? I studied classical music as well.
Yeah,
what did you study? Mozart, Beethoven, Brahms.
Yeah, all of the above.
So you think that helped your technique as you went into
definitely.
Other styles of music?
For sure.
And then when was the first time you heard like a blues artist?
Oh, when I was 15, I was corrupted by rock and roll. And then shortly after that, I discovered the New Orleans thing. I lived in New Orleans for a while.
That's awesome. That's my favorite city in the country, man.
You know, that became just a huge influence on what I did.
That's amazing.
All that thrown together ended up being, you know.
So who's your favorite blues musician?
I don't really have a favorite. I got tons. Maybe Ray Charles.
He's bad.
Yeah.
He's a bad mamma jamma. I actually sang at the Grammys when I was a kid. And
oh, yeah?
He sang the same year, and he was stomping and playing one of his tunes. And I could hear, like, you could see the floorboards stomping through. It was pretty ridiculous.
I saw him at Lincoln Center. When I lived in New York, I saw him at Lincoln Center. We lived, like, a block from Lincoln Center. And I just went over there and saw Ray Charles. Oh, my God.
That must have been insane.
Yeah, it was.
How old was he, and how old were you when that
was, like, 2000. So, you know, He was, I don't know how old.
That was before Genius Loves Company and all
that? Yeah, that was towards the end of his life. He died in, what?
2004, I think.
2004, yeah, that's right. So it was like 2000, 4 years before he died. So I was, you know, 16 years younger than I am now.
That's crazy.
30-something.
And what was it like going to Berklee College of Music?
It was cool, you know. I was playing it for a living every night at that point, so.
You liked the music scene?
Was playing.
Of course.
Playing music. Yeah, it was the whole, like, Boston music scene, you know.
So. But you know what? You're around such great talent, too. So do you think you were influenced by a lot of the players that you were playing
with? Yeah, of course. It was great being around other players. You know, L.A. is the same. I think I became a better player by moving here because surrounded by great musicians, you know, everywhere I go. People I grew up listening to, I play with now.
That's crazy.
So. It's really great.
That must have been an amazing. What brought you to LA? What was the thing that just
the weather?
Came over here? You were like, I'm tired of the snow.
Yeah, basically. Another winter was coming. I was like, you know what? I don't have to do this if I don't want to. So, you know, came here.
And, you know, like, LA is kind of a strange city when it comes to blues or, like, you know, rock and roll.
Yeah.
It's kind of like. It's weird. It's a weird scene when it comes to that music. You know what I mean? So did you find, like, when you came here, you were
when
like...
When I came here, there was a bit of a scene that's kind of dissipated now. And but I'm on the road all the time. LA is just where I live. I do sessions. I do arranging. I play live like once a year in LA, and I play about 100 shows a year.
Wow.
They're all on the road.
That's amazing.
And when I come home, like, do I really want to deal with playing in LA? No, I don't.
It's a pain in the butt.
I'll have a show at some point, but for the rest of the year, I'm pretty much on the road. Maybe December, but maybe not.
What's your favorite city to play in, or what's your favorite venue?
Oh, I don't have a favorite, really, man. I've been all over the world, and wow. I've seen some amazing... Oh, I played the Hollywood Bowl with John last year.
That's crazy.
And I just toured solo in Italy for 3 weeks and Switzerland. I just got
That's where Dimitri's from. He's from Switzerland.
Yeah, yeah, from Bern.
Bern. I played right outside of Bern.
Beautiful. Awesome.
Is it Bern?
Bern, yeah. Bern.
It's like you see something. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Bern. Bern.
Yeah.
It's like, Bern. It can't be that simple.
Bern of Schweizerdeutsch.
They were all speaking Swiss French, mm-hmm. which of course sounds nothing like French.
Right, right.
And Swiss German, you probably speak Swiss German, yeah. right?
Do you speak both?
Yeah, it's dialect, yeah.
It's got all that
in it,
right?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You know, that's it.
There you go, yeah.
Swiss German. I know this couple really well who live in Switzerland, and he's from Germany. He's like from actual Germany, and she's Swiss German. And like when they met, they couldn't understand each other, even though they were both speaking German.
Yeah, yeah.
So they had to like dial back their dialects to like a middle ground where they could understand each other. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, the Swiss have a bit of an advantage because they read in German, not in a Swiss dialect. So they got, but the Germans, they don't understand. Exactly.
It's so much of a dialect that it comes off.
That's a foreign language.
It's another language.
Yeah, it's totally. Another language.
It's another language.
But it's German. It's
kind of, it's Germanish.
Anyway, so I was just there.
Awesome.
Where were you in Italy?
I was all over, but south to north. Huh. The big cities, small
cities.
Did you
go to Capri by chance?
No, we didn't play. We didn't go out there.
Did you go to Rome, Sorrento?
Yeah, Rome and...
Firenze?
Yeah, that's right.
Did you go to Venice?
No, I didn't play Venice. I've been to Venice, but there's not really a gig in Venice.
Just a lot of walking.
A lot of water.
You know? Yeah, a lot of water, yeah.
It's amazing, though. There's just nothing like it, you know, on Earth. Wow.
Well, that's awesome. Let's get to you playing a tune.
All right.
What are you going to play us first?
I'm going to play the opening cut from my CD that you have. I didn't even give it to you.
That's all right. Let's
go to it. But it's here.
What's the name of the song?
It's called Certain Distance.
All right.
All right, that works. This way. Hey, okay, great. All right, you ready?
It is my old friend. whole human race. I feed certain distance from the whole human race. All right.
So much better now.
You're like, I'm at peace. I'm at peace. What was the inspiration behind that tune?
Well, you know, it's basically my you know, it's a pretty misanthropic song. You know, my inability to connect to the rest of the humans.
<That's>, the rest of the humans.
That was basically the inspiration, and then musically, it was it went through a bunch of transitions, but. Having this stomp box is what really made the whole thing come together.
It's awesome. Amazing. Dude, you're burning. You're a burning player, dude.
Wow.
Who are your major influences besides Ray Charles? You got Chuck LaBelle.
Dr. John, Billy Joel, Randy Newman.
Those guys aren't slouches.
No, they're okay. They're okay. Chick Corea, sure, was one of my earliest kind of influences. Herbie Hancock. People like that. People I can't touch.
you probably can. You're in the same league, man. You are. You're a pretty burning player. So tell us what it was like to first start playing with people like John Fogerty. That must have been such a rush.
Yeah, that just came out of nowhere. I got a call about 6 months before I got the gig saying, you might get a call from John Fogerty. It's from my lawyer. We have the same lawyer. It's L.A. Yeah.
Right.
He goes, you might get a call from John Fogerty. Nothing happened, so I just went on with my life because, you know, it's the music business.
Of course.
90% of everything doesn't happen, so I didn't think too much about it. It was just another thing that didn't happen, like usual. So I went on, and I got out of the blue 6 months later, got another call asking me to come down and audition. So I went down there and auditioned in his garage.
Wow.
It's like I'm playing Creedence tunes in a garage. Like, who hasn't done this?
Did they tell you to learn any?
Yeah, they gave me a few pointers, but I just basically learned all the hits. And I kind of knew, you know them. Like, I'm listening to these songs and they're so in your DNA, you know, that I was like, oh, I know these. And I had, over the years, played some of them. Of course, everybody has. And so anyway, I got the gig. Auditioned in the garage. Amazing.
How long ago was that?
5 years ago.
That's crazy. So did you play Bonnaroo with him by chance?
No, it was right before I joined the band. Bonnaroo.
Because I saw him play at Bonnaroo and I was totally blown away by his music.
He does an amazing show.
He's awesome. I mean, he's iconic. He's part of the fabric of American culture.
And those songs are they feel new every night. Like they have no age attached to them. You know, they're just timeless. That's, to me, is the highest achievement is timelessness.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he's got.
And he's kind of done a hybrid with rock and roll, blues, and
he loves that. So he's got an encyclopedic knowledge of old country and blues music, you know. And he grew up on 50s rock, you know. That's what he grew up on. And
he likes the Righteous 60s, Brothers and a lot of those guys, too,
That. I mean, we're talking about Elvis, Little Richard and Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis.
Buddy Holly, I'm sure.
And all that stuff. He loved that stuff. And by the late 60s, when Creedence came out, he felt like rock was getting too far from its roots. This is only 10 years after it was really happening. And so it was the first roots rock band was Creedence, you know.
What a great band.
They'd call it that now, but didn't have a name yet then.
That's got to be quite an honor, man.
It is.
And I'm sure, who else is in the band?
Kenny Aronoff is in the band.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's one of the best drummers ever, dude.
I know.
And who's playing bass? Uh-oh. You're about to get in trouble. Why did you give me a shout out, man? That's all right. You don't have to answer right now. And how many records have you been recording over your lifetime?
Oh, I've made 8 CDs, solo CDs.
And is it all blues influenced?
Well, it's like it's kind of a mixture. Rock and
blues. And funk.
It's just my Malone thing. I don't know what you call it exactly. I get in the blues section, but you know.
And
Dave Lomenzo, by the way, is the bass player.
Okay, there you go.
He's in Megadeth.
And, nice.
Which is a totally different gig.
That's
right?
Crazy.
And he played with David Lee Roth, and he's done a bunch of cool gigs.
Let's play something from your record. What are we going to play and
spin?
Oh,
from my record. Let's see.
You have the record, so you have to give it to Dimitri.
This all happened very fast.
Yeah. That's all right. We'll get to it. Man, that was such a burning performance.
That bass line.
I know. I was
everything. I mean, the coordination it takes.
I like the comping. I love when pianists do the comping.
I have no coordination.
It did not sound or look like it.
I know. That's what's funny about it. Well, here. I'm like off mic talking.
That's all right. Give him the CD first.
I forgot my professionalism here. Pardon me. I'm trying to pick a good.
So the CD drive is right below you, Dimitri.
Yeah, I got it ready to go.
All right.
Just don't know what happens.
Well, if you want to play, you want a slow one, and then I play a fast one.
Sure. Yeah, that's cool. Okay, that's cool. Right.
We had a fast one.
That decides it.
Yeah, let's do a little contrast.
Okay, a little contrast.
And real quick, we play with some of the same musicians. You know, Adam Gus.
That's right, Adam.
He's
Gus,
the drummer of my band, the NK band.
I've played with him many times.
And you also, I think you played with Jadina Bergstrom, blues singer.
I may have.
Okay, all right.
Sounds vaguely familiar.
All right, yeah, I think she's mentioned you before, so there's a couple people I know that you played with. Very cool. What's the name of the track that we're going to play?
Oh, this is called Can't Get There From Here.
Can't Get There From Here, let's see.
It's at the end. It's the last one.
Gotcha, all righty.
You got it up there?
Let's see, yeah. Learning as I'm going.
There we go. Dimitri is subbing for my co-host, Eddie Pence. This is the track.
This is the right intro. This is Can't Get There From Here.
Once I was beautiful. Now I just look good for my age. So full of promise, now I'm just full of rage. Yeah, I got regrets when soul crushing fear. I know where we wanna go. Thank you. a woman who loves me, picks me up off the floor. I always took that for granted. Now I won't anymore. This is my last shot at redemption.
Beautiful, man.
Beautiful song.
Crazy.
Thank you.
So you were just saying, who's on this record?
Oh, well, Kenny Aronoff is on this record, and Tim LaFave is on this record. Bob DeMarco produced it. Mike Baird is a great drummer. He's plays on most of the tracks.
That's some heavies, yeah, man.
A host of others.
That's quite...
My wife is on there, singing background.
That's awesome. She's a singer as well.
Credit. Yeah, she's great.
That's awesome.
Is she the only voice singing backgrounds here? Or
no.
You got a bunch, right?
No, it's her, our friend Tercette from Australia.
The Malonettes?
Malonettes, yeah.
That's great.
So tell us about your writing process. Like, how do you kind of get into the groove of writing some tunes for your records?
I don't know. I just come up usually with some sort of lyrical idea or musical idea, and then I stow it away. And I often come up with stuff while I'm traveling because, you know, my mind is clear. It's so much more complicated to be home than it is to be
on the road. I always have there's a crux. Like, when I'm on the road, I want to be home. When I'm home, I want to be on the road.
Right.
It's like I can't find that happy medium where I'm just completely content with one or the other.
I know. Yeah, when I get home, I want to go back on the road. And when I'm on the road, I want to be home.
You're like, I'm missing so much at home. I just want to be at home. I want to be in my own bed.
So you never have. That's my basic state of being. I'm never really.
So
otherwise, there'd be nothing to write songs about.
That's true. You have to gripe about something.
People write songs about how happy they are. You hate those people.
And then once you're like, I just want to play the Hollywood Bowl. Once you play the Hollywood Bowl, you're like, I just want to play Wembley.
The Hollywood Bowl gig was hilarious because, I don't play. You know, I like mostly get on planes to play gigs, right?
Right.
So this was local gig. So I drove there in my car. I'm like, this just seems wrong, you know. There should be a ride or something. Man, the Hollywood. I just pulled into the back and walked in like it was just a gig.
But it's such an iconic venue.
I know, the Hollywood Bowl. Wow. But I just went there in my car. It took me 15 minutes.
Yeah. You're like, God, I wish they were all Hollywood Bowl gigs.
Yeah, it was just hilarious.
It's real.
I heard John Fogerty runs 6 miles before every.
He does every day. He runs.
That's crazy. Yeah. And he's in his 60s, right?
71.
Dude. I feel lazy already, man.
You are lazy.
I am lazy.
So am I.
I cannot do that. 6 miles, and he's 71. I'm going to definitely just try to do one. One, maybe.
Mile?
Walking.
Yeah, we gotta start walking first.
I can
before
do a mile,
we run.
Maybe two. That's max.
That's impressive.
No, I read that, and I was like, dude, that, and he does it religiously on the road.
Yeah,
like,
he
it's
does.
Like,
yeah,
he
he's
just,
in good shape. He's a very disciplined guy.
It's crazy. Yeah. So when you tour with your solo project... So, do you go with a trio, or is it you bring more musicians?
I either
musicians?
Play solo, or I usually have a four-piece band with drums, bass, guitar, and I have four different bands.
Wow!
That know my show, so I have West Coast, East Coast. Cool.
Seriously, Europe. You're like the Chuck Berry of the United States,
but with more details and rehearsal. But yes, essentially, it's not a different pickup band every night. But yeah, I've got. Mm. various bands. And then here in L.A., LaVon Sattel is one of the, is a major voice on that record. Like, she sings with me and the other two girls, being my wife and the other. If I'm here in town, I use the background singers, you know.
You play at Harvell's ever?
That's never played Harvell's.
Never played Harvell's?
No, never played
What about the, what's the place in Hermosa Beach? It's called Cafe Boogaloo?
Yeah, I played there.
I don't know if it's still around.
I played Boogaloo. It's been a while. I don't know if it's there still. I think it's there.
What about New Orleans? Where do you play in New Orleans?
I play...
Tipitina's?
Pretty much everywhere. Yeah, I've played Tips. I've played the Maple Leaf.
Howlin' Wolf? You play the Howlin' Wolf there?
Yeah, I've played House of Blues a bunch of... I played Piano Night at House of Blues.
You know what's crazy? I've headlined the House of Blues in L.A. so many times.
Right.
And now that it's gone, I'm like, where's another venue that's going to be
weird
as cool?
That it's gone.
It's so weird.
There's still a bunch of houses of blues. I played most of them.
Well, they're going to open another one,
Chicago,
I suppose.
Chicago has a good...
Yeah,
one. I just
I've heard that.
That one pretty recently. And New Orleans is still there. And, yeah, I've played all over New Orleans. Great.
Who's a musician that you've always wanted to play with that you have not played with yet?
Oh.
Good question.
That's a very good question. I don't really know. I would have to think hard about that. Let's see. Somebody who's not a piano player. Oh, yeah. I've always wanted to be in Bruce Springsteen's band.
He's a badass.
Yeah. So, Roy Batan, if you're listening, you need a sub, or you're just getting sick of the whole thing and you want to... Take some time.
Bob
off.
Is available.
Call me. I know the songs. I'm from New Jersey. I'm ready.
So when you were at Berklee, real quick, just to go back, did you know you wanted to be a blues musician then?
Yeah, I mean, I was already already playing for a living, and you know.
But they probably wanted you to, you know, kind of get your jazz
thing,
chops
yeah,
up too, right?
Yeah, it was
right?
a jazz school, but that was just school, you know? Yeah.
Right.
Well, I was also, like, very into being a singer-songwriter and all the other aspects of what I'm doing besides the blues thing. I hadn't really gravitated toward yet to that rootsy of a sound. And jazz is a huge part of what I do, too. Like, you know, I'm as much of a jazz player as I am anything else.
That's awesome.
It's in there, you know?
What was your first big gig that, you know, you got out of school
Good
when
question.
You came to L.A.?
Oh, when I came to L.A.? I remember the first big show I played in L.A. was at the Wilshire Bell Theater. And I just played there in July doing my own thing.
Wow.
But I was playing... I joined the Musicians Contact Service. This is before the internet.
Right? Okay, yeah.
And it was this thing you sign up. And I was just new in town. I didn't know anybody. And you sign up and they call you if somebody needed... a piano player. So I get a call and it's the show at the Wilshire Bell to play with this singer named Becca, who's like a big star in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. No one's ever heard of her here except Filipinos. Mm-hmm. So she had enough juice to fill that 1500 seat theater
wow.
with, you know, expat Filipinos, right?
Amazing.
So, and that was my first big gig in LA. And I remember that the drummer was like this metal drummer. And it was all this, like, kind of dance pop type stuff.
Right,
you know?
Right.
The guy could not. He just couldn't. He was just the wrong drummer for the group. And they called somebody else, and that guy ended up being my drummer for the next, like, 18 years.
Wow.
And so that was a really big, that was a big moment. And I remember, too, you know, I'm, like, new in L.A. I'm, like, 25 years old, and I just moved here. And across this, we were in this rehearsal facility, right? Mm-hmm. And across the hall, Carole King was rehearsing.
Wow.
And next door, Toto was rehearsing next door. It was like, I'm like, oh my God.
That's crazy.
It's really, this stuff is really here. Right?
Yeah. Crazy.
But all, like, a lot of that scene started here in LA.
Of
you know
course,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially in the 70s.
Yeah. I knew that, but, you know, I didn't, that was the first time I encountered anything of that scale.
Right.
You know, basically.
That's crazy.
So you played with Becca, and then did anything come out of that that kind of led you into the next gig or
not
was
really
it not
I
really
just
was...
played the clubs in LA for yeah. years and years and years and just built up my, you know, my following. And then I started around the mid 90s I started touring a lot solo.
Wow.
So, you know, I was out there 200 days a year.
Wow.
I've cut back to 100.
That's
now,
crazy.
Now I make more money and play for more people.
Yeah.
So, you know, but nice. At first I just yeah I mean things. There was a lot of cool local gigs kind of in the early 90s. I caught the end of, like, a kind of good period.
Mm-hmm.
But by the mid, by 95, 6, it was starting to, you know, there wasn't as much in town. And so I started traveling. But it was good, you know. Because then I built up a real kind of worldwide following, just one person at a time.
That's amazing.
Know, basically touring hard. And I could play solo like I'm doing here, you know. So that enabled me to do it. Didn't have to make a lot of money.
Right.
You know, I could make enough money to keep going, basically.
How did you slide into the session playing from, you know, from touring?
It was through Marty Rifkin more than anybody else.
Wow. He's so
the first
amazing.
Guy to hire me for sessions in this town. And he used to do, he still does, but not as much now. He does a lot of, like, actual records. But at the time, we were doing, like, song demos for people pitching tunes in Nashville. And, you know, Nashville, it has to sound a certain
yeah.
way. They have no imagination, basically. So, right, it has to sound like the record they're going to make.
Right, right.
So he knew how to make the demo sound like the record they were going to make. So we used to do it. So every day was a new person in there. It was like, it wasn't like you spent 2 weeks in there with one artist making their record. It was like every day was a new. So I can trace almost every session in LA for the first 20, well, it's been 20 years, like back to him somehow.
That's amazing.
By just one or two degrees of people, you know.
He's one of the most tremendous musicians I've ever worked with. He was on my record from 2012, and he's just, he plays everything. He did so many takes where you're like, I could keep all of those. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
it was like,
yeah.
he's just one of those.
Was that okay?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
yeah.
He said the funniest thing, like he once did a take, and I was just sitting there like, dude, that sounds so beautiful. And he's like, well, when you get past the puppy dog stage, let me know which take you use, you know?
Yeah. the puppy I know, dog. I get that. Like, he told me to police myself, too, because I'll come in, you know, and I'll probably, the first take, I'll probably overplay and play too much stuff, right? But they're all like, you're amazing, it's great, it's done. I'm like, no, I played way too much stuff. And so later on, you're going to regret this. So just let me play it again with less stuff. And then, like, oh, yeah, okay, you know.
That's
but,
funny.
Yeah, you have
That's
to.
Funny.
So,
That's good advice, though, for musicians, you know, to police yourself.
Yeah, well, you know, people are, like, if you work with a producer who knows, they're going to know. You know what they want.
Right.
Like I've worked with producers, and you know, and working with Marty, like same thing. He's a producer, and he taught me to, you know, play parts as opposed to just ripping.
He's played with like Bruce Springsteen,
yeah,
Tom Petty.
Right.
Like
he's
just
everybody
insane.
Calls him. He never talks about it.
Yeah, I know. But the best players are like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of like
yeah.
he's.
They don't have to talk.
Yeah, that's right. The music is it speaks for itself.
Yeah.
So right. Chuck Lavelle was not a major influence for you?
Oh, he's great.
He's one of my favorites,
I mean,
man.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites.
Like, he plays the best parts. Like, he has so much facility. And like,
he's a great player. I met him 2 years ago.
Oh, my God. And he's doing, like, a lot of jazz stuff now.
Yeah, he's great. He has a tree farm. He's got his tree farm in Georgia, yeah. And he plays with the Stones, of course. Nice gig.
Plays with the Stones. He's played with the Allman Brothers. He's played with Clapton.
Yeah.
I mean, he's played with all. He's played like with all
yeah,
the cats.
Chuck is amazing. He has that band Sea Level. Remember that?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always ask like keyboardists, like or pianists.
Yeah, there's tons of people I haven't mentioned. There's a lot of people.
That's all right. No, those are just some of the guys that I'm like, because I love when a player can write parts and you're just like, that's so iconic. Like
yeah.
all the Jessica stuff that you do on Allman Brothers stuff.
Great.
It's like crazy.
I just listened to that the other
so good. So good. What are you gonna play us next?
Well, let's see. I'm going to play this instrumental
All right.
thing that's on my new record.
Awesome. Let's hear it. What's it called?
It's called Chinese Algebra.
All right.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I've got to put the headphones on.
That's right.
Headphones on. I'm going to turn this keyboard down a little bit. Okay, great.
Thank you. Nice, very nice, yeah, very nice. Well done, that was awesome. All right, all right, all right.
What a beautiful track.
It's all right, he's done. I'm getting in trouble, I love it. So let me ask you, when you're writing a tune like that, like it's got so many crazy, like, ideas.
That thing, I wanted to have one, like, 3-minute piece of music that displayed everything I'm about as a piano player without it being like non-coherent. And also I wanted to write something to discourage harmonica players from asking to sit in at my gig. Right? There's always some guy who's like, hey man, can I sit in? So I, like, we play that at sound check and then they're scared and they go away. So that was the reasons were twofold.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is I have a harmonica player that's in my band who's a badass. He's a great.
Oh, there's nothing. I love
No, but you
harmonica.
Know, but he says, but he has like a thing with other harmonica players. He calls other harmonica players boozer bluesers.
the guy.
There's always somebody who does that.
The guy who's hanging around every night asking the students, the guy who doesn't have a gig.
Right.
So like the guy with the gig is working, you know.
Right. No, and that's what he says. He says, I've studied harmonica, like literally he was at USC studying jazz studies as a harmonica player, like even the school was like, make your own curriculum, you know what I mean, like, because we've never had a harmonica player, you know, do all this stuff, and he studied the craft. And it's so funny that you said that, because harmonica players are always like, hey man, can I sit in? And they just play a bunch of like kind of bullshit.
They never stop.
Yes.
Stan Barron's plays on my record.
That's awesome.
Amazing.
Howard Levy is one of my favorite players. He's
Stan
such a
plays
badass.
At War now. He's like doing
wow
it.
Really.
Yeah,
that's crazy. That's a good gig.
For ages, yeah. He took Lee Oscar's gig, basically. I mean, Lee Oscar quit, right?
Right.
And he's been playing Lee Oscar harmonicas for years. He's like, Lee, man, they offered me your gig. Is that good? He goes, yeah, I don't want to play with those guys. I'm over it. Yeah.
Let me ask you this: when you record, do you prefer analog or digital, or do you use a combination of both?
It's usually a combination of both. Analog's great, if you can get a hold of it. I love vintage keyboards. Like I only play a digital piano if forced to, you know. But like, were we on the air when we were talking about the gear?
Yeah. Oh, actually, no. Yeah, we were talking about that when your song was playing.
Like, I usually use a real piano live and a B3 with John and a Wurlitzer electric piano. Me and the Wurlitzer are about the same age,
You know, it's funny. Like, I play some keys, too, and it's like, for a long time, I was not into keyboards at all. Like, I just hated the piano sounds in a lot of the keyboards. Did you ever feel like that when you were...
Yeah.
Because they've advanced now a lot.
They sound a lot better. But, you know, for me, it's more like the feel is the thing.
Right.
You know, there's nothing like, when you play a real piano, it's just a whole different experience. You play better. I do, anyway. Like, my imagination runs freer as an improviser, and I just, my accuracy is better. It's just, it responds to you.
Right.
You know, like, every note of a piano has got, like, 70 or 80 moving parts or something, like, maybe more. Maybe, you know, like a piano, actually. You ever seen, like, a side view? Oh. Yeah, that's why it's so sensitive to everything you do. A digital piano has 2 moving parts, like a lever. There's like the key made out of plastic and this lever underneath with a weight in it. So it's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's a pretty good replication if there's nothing else around. And, you know, it gets the job done.
Do you prefer writing instrumentals or songs?
No, I like songs. I mostly write songs. I like that instrumental. We were talking about Jessica, so then I felt I had to play it.
Oh, no, that's great. And you had, like, some ragtime stuff going on
it's
in
all there.
Yeah, it's like...
It's all there. And 2 bars of classical, which is about, like, my, you know, these days my classical abilities is worth about 2 bars, you know?
You know what's funny, though? It's like your technique is really slamming. I mean, it is together.
Yeah,
you can tell that a lot of the best players are like that.
It's because of that training.
Effortless. I mean, it's just like...
It is. Everything else is hard.
Amazing.
Yeah. Everything else is hard.
It's hard for me to give lessons because I'm like, come on, everybody can do this. It's easy.
Well, let me ask you a question, too. Like, what are your future plans? Are you going to be on the road? Are you playing anywhere?
Playing with John. We have, like, a residency at the Venetian Theater in Las Vegas.
Oh, that's fun.
How long are you there
for? This month.
That's crazy.
And then I have solo dates on the East Coast after that.
How do you not gamble all your money away?
I'm not interested in gambling. I chose to be a musician.
How can I gamble your money away?
Yeah. don't have that much money. You'll be leaving early. Gambling never appealed to me because I already gambled with my life being right. a musician. So
yeah.
I figured I was able to do this for a living. It's like I already won the lottery. Right. So.
Well, let me ask you this. So, like, your family, were they musicians? Were any of them into music?
Nobody was, no. Nobody saw it coming. I'm adopted. I don't really know. I don't know who I came from, like, biologically.
So you were just like, I have this gift. I must share it with the world.
I mean, I was like a really antsy, annoying little kid, and my parents wanted to focus me on anything they could. I got great grades, you know. I was like, but I was just like, so, you know, every well-rounded kid, if you take piano lessons, you know, we had it in the house. So I started taking lessons. And for the first few months, I was just like any other normal kid. I was, you know, nothing special was going on. And then all of a sudden, like at once, I could, you know, play for real. And then it was game on after
that. Wow.
That's crazy. Exciting. Yeah, so are you recording any new records coming up?
I got about half a record worth of tunes. Been playing on other people's records. And I'll probably start working on one later this year or early next year.
And I got to ask you just a musician question. Who are you listening to now?
Who am I listening to now? This movie came out called Sing Street.
I've heard about
Great
this
movie.
Yeah.
I've been listening to the soundtrack to that. I'm listening to Lord. Have you heard the Lord?
Yeah, of course.
It's amazing. I mean, musically, it sounds nothing like I've ever listened to before.
Right, right.
The songs are just kill me. They're just great. And a lot of jazz these days.
Like who?
You know, Les McCann, I've been listening to. And Herbie and Chick and, you know.
I always go back to Herbie. Herbie is just I know. He's just he's a crazy mofo.
Yeah. And I basically never listen to stuff that sounds like what I do.
Right.
Because I don't want
Well, you want to grab some from inspiration. And
I don't
want
to. I absorb that stuff solidly, you know. And,
right.
But I don't gravitate towards it as much. But, you know.
And are you ever
I like to
influenced?
Learn to. And I've been, like, driving around in the car. I mostly listen to the KUSC, the classical station. That's mostly what I've been listening to.
Because it gives you peace of mind. You're like, enough with the rackets.
Yeah,
let me listen to something soothing.
I know. When I'm out on the road playing loud rock and roll, like, I go back to my room and I put, like, I got the app for the classical station. I put it on because I need the contrast, you know.
You know what I do after a gig?
I love loud
I actually
rock and
love
roll.
Silence. I love
silence. After the gig, we're all about
silence. Or, like, talk radio, like, real low, like, just so I can just get a murmur.
Mostly silence, but then after about an hour, I put the classical on. You know, and I love playing loud rock and roll. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
it's
no,
the
it's
greatest
the best.
Thing ever.
It's, the best.
It's like the
it
energy.
The
but, you know, after you've done it, you don't want to hear more loud rock.
Yes.
You know.
No, absolutely. Not, the after party. Your after party's way mellow.
Yeah. Party? Sometimes the band has a second glass of wine. That's about as hard as we party.
Who's your favorite band that you've toured with?
I don't know. I mean, I've mostly toured solo with my own band. That's what I've done.
No, I mean, like, has, like, John Fogerty ever toured with an opener or another major act?
We've done some stuff. We did shows with Jimmy Buffett. That was really cool.
That's awesome.
We did a few with Jackson Browne, and that was really awesome. I love Jackson Browne. Who else did we play with? There's other people. Blanking right now, but those were the most recent kind of.
And any fun sessions that you've been doing lately? Anybody that you've been playing? Anybody's record that you've been playing on?
Oh, no one big, you know.
Well, you should be playing on everybody's record.
I mean,
it's ridiculous.
You know, call me. You know.
Well, speaking of that, how can people find you?
BobMalone.com.
Let's spell it out because people are dumb. Let's just face
Bob,
it.
Bob, M A L O N E, no Y, and. I've got, from there you can get to all my I'm on all social media, so you can link to all of those right there at Bob Malone.
Bob, you've been a tremendous guest. I'm so glad you were able to do this, and I want to have you back in, you know, about 9 or 10 months and just
maybe
see all
more than an hour's notice.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Maybe
you came
it's
in,
better that
You know what, I, what was so crazy? I was telling Dimitri, I'm like, this guy is such a badass, and, like, I've known about you forever, but I didn't have any of your contact stuff, so, right. like, to get you on the show, I was like, I can't believe I just pulled a badass onto the, like, out of the hat and look at
our. I'm still going to go. I have this friend I hang out with. We smoke cigars and you know, talk about 19th century literature. We're nerds.
That's awesome.
Total nerds. Yeah, so I'm going to go nerd right out now. Yeah.
You're turning up to 11 right now.
Yeah, I'm turning the nerd up to 11 right now, yeah.
Well, Bob Malone, you are a tremendous musician, player, and we wish you all the best. Thank you so much for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. Dimitri Cerny, thanks for filling in as a special co-host of the night.
My pleasure, Bob. You were fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Totally
thank
worth
you
it.
Listening to you.
Amazing.
Appreciate it.
We'll have
see
you back.
You next time.
All we'll
right.
See you guys next week.
Okay.